From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, softening everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. All takes place. We've got to stop this inhuman race. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information you're about to hear, because this isn't couch potato radio. It's activist radio, and I'm asking you to take down that information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sitter, locked down in the Dragon at the Rope Blockade, or riding your jet ski underneath the Coast Guard. If you have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information at the end of the show. And as usual, we start off with activist news. And the new year brings more protests over logging in Indiana state lands. The Bloomington Herald-Times reports that the first auction of the year of timber from Indiana's state lands was met by a dozen protesters who gathered in the parking lot of the offices of the Yellowwood State Forest with signs reading, "Let our forest grow," and "Yellowwood is not a tree farm." In response, Indiana Department of Natural Resources officials photographed the protesters and the license plates of their cars and then handed around a copy of the state guidelines on public demonstrations and told the protesters they would need a permit if they were to assemble there again. The protesters and a reporter were also barred from entering the offices during the auction. The Herald-Times article reports that protest organizer Joshua Martin from the Indiana Forest Alliance said he felt forest officials were trying to silence the voices of protesters. Another protester, David Haber, a religious studies professor at Indiana University, said he thought, quote, "most people would be surprised to find out logging takes place on public land, such as state forests. So many people assume that state lands means protected land." And Yellowwood property manager Jim Allen reports that about two-thirds of the state forest is considered commercial and that the DNR, that's the Department of Natural Resources, decides what trees will be harvested. And from Australia, protesters moon the Prime Minister. Anti-logging protesters dropped their drawers Thursday and mooned Australian Prime Minister John Howard during a general election campaign tour, local media reported. Australian Broadcasting Corporation said the 10 environmental activists bared their bottoms in East Gippsland in the southern state of Victoria. They had Howard's End painted in black on their bums. Mooners said they did not think Howard's Conservative Liberal National Coalition was doing enough to protect forests in Australia. And the Earth Liberation Front uses direct action to counter urban sprawl in Louisville, Kentucky. 5 windows were broken and 18 vandalized, causing upwards of $800 in damages in the first wave of attacks against corporate sprawl in Louisville, Kentucky. The damage affected two nearly finished buildings, including the PNC Bank. The once beautiful farmlands of eastern Jefferson County, Kentucky, are being destroyed by earth rapers at the expense of corporate profits. This was the first, be it minor, direct action attempt to the sprawl. It will be a long-fought battle, and more actions are planned in the future. Signed, Louisville ELF. And that's Earth Liberation Front. Moving to Brazil, more than 1,000 poor Brazilian farmers joined by activists attending an anti-World Economic Forum summit stormed a biotech plant owned by U.S. life sciences giant Monsanto, threatening on Friday to camp out indefinitely to protest genetically modified foods. Some 1,200 workers from settlements of the radical landless workers movement in Brazil's southernmost state of Rio Grande do Sul invaded the plant just before midnight on Thursday, yanking out genetically modified corn and soybean crops at Monsanto's experimental farm. "We're definitely staying here indefinitely," said Solet Complet, the local MST leader. "We want to make a statement. These seeds trick farmers and create dependency on seeds produced by a big multinational." The MST families took over the research center and warehouses, hanging hammocks and setting up mattresses and boxes of food. The protesters scrawled on the walls, "The seed of death and Monsanto is the end of farmers." Monsanto said on Friday it had requested that local authorities restore order at the unit. Monsanto regrets this incident in which it was a victim of an aggressive movement that puts the rights to freedom of movement and private property at risk. But it affirms its confidence in democracy and a quick reaction by authorities to restore order, the company said in a statement. Militant farmers from around the globe who were in Brazil for the World Social Forum, a rival meeting to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, joined the protesters. José Bové, a French farmer and leader of the Confédération Paysanne, who catapulted to fame when he trashed his local McDonald's, took a four-hour bus ride from the state capital of Porto Alegre to lend his support. Quote, "Monsanto says transgenics require less pesticides and chemicals, but that's a lie. Transgenics increase dependence on those products," he said. Monsanto says its lab-enhanced seeds increase productivity and reduce the use of agrochemicals, among other benefits, but watchdog groups like Greenpeace have opposed the wide-scale use of biotechnology that they say has not been developed with sufficient environmental or health impact studies. They also worry it will force farmers to become dependent on seeds produced by corporate labs rather than on those grown in the field. Brazil is the only country in the Western Hemisphere that attempts to ban the commercial planting, importing, or sale of genetically modified food, but they do allow research. Still, it has been an ongoing battle, with the government often trying to reverse its position on genetically modified organisms and some farmers smuggling in GM seeds from neighboring Argentina. Industry insiders suspect that up to a third of the Rio Grande do Sul soybean crop is genetically modified. Some 10,000 activists united in Porto Alegre for the anti-Davos forum are expected to condemn GM food, along with a wide range of what they say are neoliberal and capitalist policies that have deepened the divide between the rich and the poor. The landless workers movement families have led protests outside the Monsanto plant, but this is the first time that they invaded that facility. And moving north, another striptease for the trees bears illegal logging near Montgomery Woods in Northern California. A small crowd of concerned citizens, fronted by the legendary bare-breasted poet La Tigresa, successfully stalled timber operations that threatened the world's two tallest trees at a logging site adjacent to Montgomery Woods State Park in Mendocino County. Reciting her Earth Goddess poetry topless as the loggers respectfully listened, La Tigresa was supported by local residents, mothers with babies, children, and dogs who were all there to express concerns over the environmental impacts of this logging plan. The timber company was delayed long enough for the California Department of Forestry inspectors to come out and find violations of the forest practice rules. Although the company was cited for violating the law, they were still allowed to continue the cutting. Two major concerns there are erosion and blowdown caused by cutting the buffer zone around the park. Montgomery Woods is nestled in a narrow canyon where increased high winds can topple these exceptionally tall trees, some over 350 feet tall. That's just over 180 meters. The erosion caused by logging on the steep terrain immediately above the salmon spawning beds in the headwaters of Big River has been identified as a major factor in the dramatic decline of salmon populations. California Department of Parks and Recreations, which runs Montgomery Woods, has been negotiating to purchase this property and to add it to the park, but has yet to satisfy landowner Bill DeRitter's asking price, probably excessive. Local residents are outraged at the so-called cut-and-run tactics of out-of-town land speculators such as Bill DeRitter and his partner Rick Priest. Both have been reported to Mendocino County's environmental prosecutor Barry Vogel by local residents for questionable logging practices. Activists, including La Tigresa, vow to continue to be present at the Montgomery Woods logging site nearly every morning this week to stop the timber harvest plan. The hillside contains important habitat for spotted owls, peregrine falcons, mountain lions, Pacific fishers, and is immediately above a known salmon stream. La Tigresa and 9 other forest activists are currently facing charges of trespass and are challenging a restraining order to stay off the nearby property of Mendocino Redwood Company. Mendocino Redwood Company is owned by the Fisher family of San Francisco, which also owns the Gap, Banana Republic, and Old Navy clothing stores, and includes Baby Gaps. They have been accused of unsustainable forest practices by local residents and activists, despite recent certification by a provider of sustainably harvested timber. La Tigresa and the other Mendocino 10 are holding a rally outside the courthouse in Fort Bragg on February 13th before their pre-trial hearing to expose the timber industry's practices and watered-down certification process, which still allows the use of toxic herbicide spraying in forests, cutting of old-growth trees. Their trial is set for May 7th. If you want more information, contact James Ficklin, 707-962-0547. That's 707-962-0547. Or Daryl Cherney at 707-943-3788. That's 707-943-3788. And Motul Forest Defenders are going strong. And this is written by Forest Defender. That's a great name. I love that one. It's been since November 28th that Maxam Pacific Lumber sent in Columbia helicopter loggers accompanied by Humboldt County sheriffs to log old-growth Douglas fir in the Motul River watershed located in California's Lost Coast area. Since then, Motul Forest Defenders have moved almost 2 miles up Long Ridge, 12 miles inside Pacific Lumber property, to create the Motul Free State, a blockade complete with several lockdowns, a junk car, and hanging pods across the road. The idea is to stop Maxam's crews before they can get their chainsaws into the forest. Clearly, Maxam has chosen not to challenge the blockade and the near-constant presence of 30 nonviolent forest defenders in the woods. Logging operations have effectively been shut down for 9 weeks, a growing Humboldt County blockading record. Motul and Humboldt residents, who rose at 3 in the morning for weeks in a row, are holding off on the outer blockade gates for now, but are ready to mobilize if Maxam chooses to go back in. Forest defenders have spent Hanukkah, Christmas, and New Year's at the blockade, sometimes enduring days of freezing temperatures and a foot of snow. 5 THPs have been approved by the California Department of Forestry, despite the community's tremendous opposition and active plans for acquisition. Several THPs are awaiting the outcome of legal challenges, and 3 currently sit on the desks of CDF staff awaiting approval. Maxam Pacific Lumber's sustained yield plan shows plans to liquidate almost all of the old growth on the North Fork of the Motul River in the next 8 years. A remarkable drama is playing itself out on the remote valley on Northern California's Lost Coast. The residents of the remote watershed are rising up in growing numbers in opposition to logging, and one of the last great stands of old-growth Douglas fir is still in private hands in the entire region. At stake is almost 3,000 acres of previously unentered ancient forest, as well as the rights of a local community to protect their watershed and their future against the economic demands of a distantly run corporation. The Motul has been the scene of one of North America's most comprehensive, entirely citizen-run effort to take on the restoration of an entire watershed. Since 1975, the people of the Motul, including the Motul Restoration Council, have been struggling to rescue their once mighty salmon runs from an oblivion to which 40 years of intensive and often damaging logging seem to have doomed them. 93% of the valley's forest land have been logged since World War II. Salmon runs are at about 5% of their original stature. Now residents of all ages and walks of life are on call to rise up literally at 3 in the morning to stand vigil at the gates that loggers must use to get to Rainbow Ridge, the site of the challenged timber harvest. Rainbow Ridge is currently the property of Pacific Lumber Company, once a well-run family-owned operation that was taken over by corporate raider Charles Hurwitz and his Houston-based Maxam Corporation in 1985. Hurwitz has since been rapidly and systematically reducing the standing timber volume, especially the old growth on the company's 200,000 acres. Prior timber harvest plans on PL lands in the Rainbow Ridge area, like the current ones, call for clear-cutting and old-growth forest stands, a practice largely discredited elsewhere in California. The earlier logging has resulted in delivery into the river system of so much sediment from the steep eroding slopes that the whole lower mainstream of the Motul has been destabilized. Most recently, Pacific Lumber gained a measure of attention when they sold to the government some of their last stands amounting to thousands of acres of old-growth redwood. This headwaters deal was publicized to the public by the Clinton administration and others as an unqualified environmental success. In fact, the deal gave the company almost $500 million, plus the latitude to log heavily on its other holdings under a habitat conservation plan. These HCPs have become the preferred tool in the Clinton era for abetting resource extraction that endangered species considerations might have otherwise prevented. Residents in the Batol and other watersheds in the area began to think of their valleys as orphans of headwaters, since their old growth and associated endangered species seemed to have been thrown up for grabs. When Pacific Lumber began to submit a series of 8 timber harvest plans for Rainbow Ridge over the past 2 years, all of them calling for clear-cutting of old growth, people began to fight back. Now they have fought as a combination of legal challenges, public relation campaigns, and when all other means to stop the logging have failed, direct action in the woods and at the gates. The leading edge of citizens' struggle are a group of dedicated young people who call themselves the Matole Forest Defenders. Among them are core members of the team that supported Julia Butterfly in her 2-year-long tree sit and who defended the Headwaters Forest. Some are local, some are from out of the area. All are willing to make considerable sacrifices. They have set up a camp on Rainbow Ridge itself in the deepening winter, a 12-mile hike in, most often at night without flashlights. They faced rain, snow, cold, and hunger while waiting for the logging to begin, and when it finally did, they were ready. Their method is to stand between the loggers and the trees to slow down the rate at which the big trees can be fallen. It is very dangerous work. The fact that the loggers have been accompanied each day by 9 to 12 Humboldt County sheriffs has not limited the activists' effectiveness. The sheriff's role in the woods was described by one of the forest defenders as that of blocking backs for the tree fallers. The lawsuit has been filed in local court challenging the legality of several of the timber harvest plans. Pacific Lumber has been cited for violations of forestry regulations on more often than any other company in California. Their timber harvest license was even withdrawn several years ago and then reinstated, unfortunately. Meanwhile, groups of Matole residents with an average age of 50 years have kept up the blockades at the gates onto the property to slow down access and engage loggers in dialogue. Their ultimate hope, though, is for Pacific Lumber to sell the land to a Humboldt County group that recently formed a nonprofit organization to manage timberlands for maximum ecological and economic benefit for the local community. But Pacific Lumber has refused to become a willing seller up till now. If you'd like more information about the Matole Forest Defenders and their direct action campaign, you can leave a voicemail at 707-441-3828 and let them know where you can be called back at. That's 707-441-3828, or you can visit their webpage at www.matoledefense.org. If you wish to contact North Coast Earth First, their voicemail number is 707-825-6598. That's 707-825-6598, and their email address is ncef@humboldt1.com. That's ncef@humboldt1.com. I want to thank Forest Defender for that lengthy but highly informative piece. And we have some announcements here for the next couple of minutes. The California Private Forest Land Organizing and Strategy Conference is coming up next weekend, February 9th through 11th. California's independent environmental community, labor, and political organizers and alliance builders are gathering to trade skills, tactics, and strategies to plan for future work in forest watersheds and the cities of the state. Proposed agenda includes sessions on utilizing the agencies and attending public hearings, strategies for sustainability, using water issues to connect the state, interfacing public and private land issues, how bad land use harms other people's private property, lobbying strategies, mass and local grassroots organizing, building bridges with labor, national, Native Americans, and others, sharing skills and information, developing statewide and local ballot initiatives, and creating a statewide movement. Included will be an organic beer party with live entertainment provided by you and your friends Friday and Saturday night with a campfire, weather permitting. It all starts 4 p.m. on Friday, February 9th, and goes through 4 p.m. on Sunday, February 11th. Pre-registration is requested. A donated fee of $35 is also requested. Prepaid, please. And that includes your lodging and meals for the entire weekend. A pretty darn good deal if you ask Uncle Dennis. And if you want more information, you are urged to contact Environmentally Sound Productions And their phone number is 707-923-4949. That's 707-923-4949. Or you can send them email at ensopro, E-N-S-O-P-R-O, at asis.com. That's ensopro at asis.com. And get set for a fine weekend, and you will see Uncle Dennis there. Stop the macaw whale hunt. The macaw whale hunt continues to threaten the legal protections accorded to all whales worldwide. Prior to preparing the legally required environmental assessment of the potential impacts of the macaw hunt, the federal government had already entered into contractual agreements with the macaw tribe to act as their partners in the management of a whale hunt. This clear bias in favor of the whale hunt before ostensibly assessing its impacts was a violation of U.S. law, you betcha. On June 6th last year, the National Marine Fisheries Service's original environmental assessment was voided by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which ordered the National Marine Fisheries Service to prepare another assessment. The court found the original environmental assessment fatally defective and instructed that a new EA be prepared in a way that ensured an objective evaluation free of the previous taint. Unfortunately, instead, the National Marine Fisheries Service has now produced an environmental assessment that is even more obviously biased than the original. A 30-day comment period is currently underway. Based on comments received, the National Marine Fisheries Service will prepare the final environmental assessment. Read the draft environmental assessment at www.nwr.noaa.gov. That's www.nwr.noaa.gov. And here's some points to make when you do make your comments. The 1997 International Whaling Commission quota granted for the hunting of gray whales explicitly required that any hunting must be undertaken by a native group that has a recognized Aboriginal subsistence need, and the macaw do not. The macaw whale hunt does not meet the definition of the Aboriginal subsistence whaling, as was made explicitly clear by the member nations of the International Whaling Commission when the proposal was brought before them in 1996 and again in 1997. Third point, the continued violation of the Aboriginal subsistence whaling guidelines by the IWC by permitting the macaw whale hunt is likely to cause significant environmental impacts worldwide by undermining an international whale conservation agreement. The discussion of resident whales in the environmental assessment is sketchy and conclusive, yet on the basis of limited or non-existent data, the National Marine Fisheries Service finds no potential environmental impact on whales from this small subpopulation being hunted and killed. Hardly objective, eh? There is clear bias in favor of permitting a hunt, and that remains evident throughout the environmental assessment. The National Marine Fisheries Service must produce a full environmental impact statement that takes a hard look at all the potential consequences of the macaw whaling proposal. And here's where you can send your comments. Please have them prepared and sent by February 16th. The address, Gail Heim, H-E-I-M, Gail Heim, Office of Protected Resources, NOAA Fisheries, 1315 East West Highway, Silver Springs, Maryland. That's MD 20910. Once again, that address, Gail Heim, Office of Protected Resources, NOAA Fisheries, 1315 East West Highway, Silver Springs, Maryland, 20910. And we want to thank the Sea Shepherd International for this bulletin. And you can contact them at 360-370-5500. That's 360-370-5500 for Sea Shepherd International. And, of course, their webpage at www.seashepherd.org is where you can find more information on the web. The Pennsylvania Game Commission has announced a new Endangered and Threatened Species section on its website to assist teachers, students, and others who want current information about Pennsylvania state wildlife species of special concern. The new section includes detailed profiles of 14 endangered and 18 threatened wild birds and mammals, and a quick reference to all of the state's endangered, threatened, at-risk, and extirpated species. To go to the site, it's www.pgc.state.pa.us. That's www.pgc.state.pa.us, and select wildlife, and you're there. The Southern Sustainable Forest Alliance is formed from Wild Law, Wild Alabama, Wild South, and the Dogwood Alliance. They've come together to create the Southern Sustainable Forest Alliance. The goal is to provide private landowners information and free legal assistance to help them make better and more informed choices about how they manage their forests. The project has set up a website, southernsustainableforests.org, which provides forest landowners information on sustainable forestry practices and conservation easements. If you'd like more information, send email to wildlaw@aol.com. And right now, we're going to take a little musical break here. We're going to listen to Casey Neal. This one's called "The Power Is Turning."
Serpent's eye. The power is turning. The power is turning. Rogue spirits are waiting, anticipating. Voices long forgotten again will awaken. The fire in the eye of the eagle, deep and regal. No voice rivals the song of the past. At last, at last, at last, the power is turning. The wild sea is burning. Watch as it comes alive. A world is emerging. See it in the gleam of the serpent's eye. The power is turning. The power is turning. This is not the end of the world, it is only the beginning. An awakening, a reckoning, the nameless is returning. Rising from the western ocean, shining off the sea. Carried by a magic wind, alive again, alive again. The power is turning, the wild sea is burning. Watch as it comes alive. A world is emerging. See it in the gleam of the serpent's eye. The power is turning. The power is turning. The power is turning. The power is turning.
And Earth First Radio will be returning. Just stay tuned and we'll be right back.